Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Our panel is here, Tom and Melissa Gould, Fran Ginsberg. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and tonight's topic is going to be deathbed visions and end-of-life experiences. And by the way, if you have been had the experience of sitting with a loved one or somebody that was close to you when they passed, and you experienced or witnessed some of these end-of-life experiences, call us. We'd like to hear from you. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. Tonight's sponsor is the Comlock Center, and you can find them on the web at comlock.com, K-A-M-L-A-K. And Fran, I know that you're itching to let us know
what's coming on. Yes, okay. And first, just at the top of this list, I want to remind everybody, go to the events page on our website regularly. We add things in between the radio shows. If you don't listen to the radio shows, you're going to miss out on something that's coming up that you may actually really want to attend. The website is foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And just to let our listeners know our free events that are coming up this month, we have on December 9th from 2 to 3 p.m., Eastern Time, that's 11 to noon Pacific Time, the Visionary Explorers Group, that's an online meeting. And then on December 10th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time in Sanibel, Florida, is the Sanibel Afterlife Discussion Group. And both the Miami, Florida, and Cold Spring Harbor, New York Afterlife Discussion Groups met earlier this month. So watch the website and mark your calendars for the free meetings of those groups. Our first annual winter grief retreat in Fort Myers, Florida, is just the place to be this January 5th through 7th, 2018. Bring nature's sunshine into your day as you spend a meaningful weekend with like-minded people, all open to transforming grief. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Joseph Scheel, Janet Nohavik, and Doreen Malloy, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators, including a return of the much-loved Dr. Mo Hanna. Like our summer retreat, it also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. Please keep in mind our no-refund policy when making your reservations. Our Holidays Past raffle is this month, in a few days, maybe even. In two weeks. Looking at a calendar, in 2 weeks. So get your entries in. You can win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Renata Santarelli, Renee Buck, Eliza Ray, Catherine Nadal, and Neil Zapowski. The drawing is December 23rd. Winners are selected randomly by a computer program from consecutive numbers assigned at entry. So if you've already entered, you may want to buy more chances and get assigned with different numbers. That's how it works. And don't miss the early bird rates for our next afterlife luncheon, May 6th. This event was a total sellout last October, and the next one promises a very special look at the afterlife as attendees spend a day with two people who have all the answers. Lloyd Auerbach, one of the world's leading parapsychologists and respected expert on ghost hauntings and poltergeist phenomena, teams up with Forever Family Foundation certified medium Kim Russo, star of the TV series The Haunting of, as she will connect with those in spirit who will lead her to their loved ones in the audience. Plan to be at the Hilton Long Island Huntington in Melville, New York, for this full day, which includes a scrumptious luncheon. And watch for our email announcing the 2018 webinar schedule. And please keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. Your donations are also tax deductible. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. Okay, back to the show.
Okay, and as I mentioned, we're discussing end-of-life experiences, which is a broad term. People heard deathbed visions and things of, and calling it all sorts of different things. But basically, people, when they're close to death, have these non-physical experiences of seeing loved ones and other things that you don't normally associate with the aspect of dying. And sometimes the it's like a secret to a lot of people in the general public. They don't realize it, but the hospice workers and the people in the field sure realize it, and they use it as a barometer. We mentioned in an email that you sent out that listeners might want to watch a video by Dr. Christopher Kerr, K-E-R-R, who's a director of a hospice in Buffalo. And he told a story where he was treating a patient and with the typical antibiotics and so forth, and told the nurse that the patient was okay and he still had quite a bit of time left. And the nurse said, "No, you're wrong. He's about to go." And she said, "Well, how do you know that?" And he said, "Because he's talking to deceased relatives." Which was totally foreign to him. This was early in his career. And, of course, the nurse was right, and he passed that night, I think, the patient. And afterwards, at least he was open enough to learn, and finally wanted to learn about it. And he said that, if you recall from watching the video, he said that he never, being a doctor, a medical doctor and a scientist, he never gave any thought to that. And he had an aversion, really, to this non-physical aspect of dying. But the topic chose him. So, I mean, that was interesting. I mean, why do you think that people, become interested in what happens at death? I mean, what's the trigger for it? Any thoughts on that?
I just, not to answer that yet, Bob, but it also in his talk, he said, as a med student, there's no talk of death ever. It's like you deny it's even going to happen, which I right. thought was very interesting.
Right.
Denial.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, because they're
trained to.
Their whole training is to avoid death
right.
and prevent or slow it up.
Right. And death is, if they look at it as a failure, right?
In a way. Yeah. Maybe they
still,
do.
It still merits discussion at some point. I mean,
yeah.
it just is validating to what kind of society we live in, that we won't talk about death in any way, shape, or form. That,
yeah.
And we've created a culture where it's a terrible, scary thing. Whereas years and years ago, even the Native Americans would celebrate somebody's finished
yeah.
their obligation here. They've graduated. They're going on to something better, and we've made it into something scary and negative.
Well, if you notice, if you remember from his talk, he felt honored and privileged. It was like having a spiritual experience and just being among the people that were dying and having these experiences. So a lot of people would have trouble with thinking like, how could sitting with a dying person, which you would usually think of as being an extremely sad event, and something that people wouldn't ever want to do. But you hear that, that people find it, sort of like a cathartic kind of experience.
Tom and I got to share that experience with his mom. And I have to say, we both were actually kind of giddy when she did cross over. We were in the hospice center. It was the evening that we'd come to, she hadn't even been in there 24 hours. And the nurse told us there were signs that perhaps within the next 24 hours she'd be passing, and we both thought, you know, she was I don't know if the right word's incoherent or comatose, but she was not responsive.
Unconscious,
that's the word. And so we looked at each other and we're like, well, we're here right now. Tomorrow, you know, we're not, let's see, let's just sit with her and see what happens. And we started singing. Tom was stroking her hair. I was holding her hand. And within the hour, she had passed. And we just felt like we'd been a part of something so special, because we were there for her final moments. Mm. Weren't you feeling that way, Tom? I mean,
Oh, yeah.
Your mom, but we were like tears of joy for her almost.
Well, and it was also remarkable that we, as you said, we were singing to her. So, you know, I sang, Sweet Love, Sweet Chariot, you know, coming for to carry me home. And I finished the song and she was,
Took another breath,
and I said, "Hey, Mom, that was your cue. That was a big finish, the Hollywood, you know, out." and then it was October, and she always loved Christmas songs. So I figured, well, she's not going to hear them this year, so why not? And because I was saying, it's okay to let go. Dad's waiting for you, and peace will come. And then I thought of, Sleep in Heavenly Peace. So I started singing Silent Night to her. And when I got to the end of the song and said, "And sleep in heavenly peace," just like that, she took her last breath.
Yeah. And then, that is, a lot of people feel that the dying can choose the time, that they hold on or not to hold on. But what a wonderful thing. In smoothing the transition for her. And of course, this is a woman who said that she feels a little guilty in that she feels a little excited about what awaits her in those terms.
Yeah.
So, and that was a wonderful, about as good a transition as you can get.
We kind of felt that in our afterlife discussion group the other night, you talked about the silver cord or the whoosh. We kind of felt like that happened in her home right before the hospice. People carried her out, whether the next day in hospice her body was just still functioning, but we felt almost like her energy left her body in her own home where she wanted to be.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into what it is that the dying, report, seeing. So, whether it be, a lot of people say deathbed visions, but it's a lot more than visions. Sometimes they're auditory, and sometimes there are the other senses involved. So stay with us. We're going to be back in a couple of minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love knows no death. A groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org Grief and Loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Tonight's topic is the end-of-life experiences. And we mentioned deathbed visions and people near death, and the window is usually maybe 2 weeks out, you know, and people report, when I say they report, the loved ones sitting with them see them reaching out and talking to people that their loved ones can't see, greeting people, experiencing this overwhelming feeling of peace. The fear that they had about dying disappears, and it sure seems like that there's no, you know, medical explanation for it, because a lot of the people have. Obviously, they have terminal illnesses. They're beyond medical intervention, and yet it's not an isolated thing. It's been studied, you know, for centuries now. The question is, though, if there is no medical explanation for it, and there isn't, except that the typical argument that it's oxygen deprivation and it's hallucinations, then the only explanation is that it's a spiritual event, which makes sense to me. So, I mean, I believe, I'll ask you, but I'm sure that you are going to agree, that it's by design that we have help when we cross over, and we have escorts, and, you know, reunited with the people that we love. I mean, you agree with that?
I do, and I know this also, I believe, came up at our discussion group the other night about, say you have a small child who dies, and we here in physical form are saying, but who's going to greet that child? They were too young, they hadn't met these other family members. And I just felt like that's sort of a non-issue, because if we're subscribing to any of these beliefs, the child didn't have to physically know what anyone while he was on Earth. I don't feel it was important that he or she recognize or got to know anyone that's on the other side, because we're all connected in so many ways to other individuals. I can only imagine there are many, many, many souls on the other side that when the child crosses over will be there to greet them, and the child will be comforted, especially because the child wasn't on the physical plane for that long. The child's almost closer to those that are on the other side.
And we've witnessed readings with our own kids where the medium talks about babies that are coming, and they reference, you know, they reference my mother. Oh, she's on the other side, and she's holding this little baby that's about to be yours. So whether the baby actually makes it to the physical plane or not, or is only there in short enough time not to have cognizant memory of the physical, they still have connected to the family members who are on the other side. So
and also a lot of people report not only seeing their loved ones, they might see mom, they might see dad, they might see, you know, a sibling, and at the same time they say they see others, but they don't know who the others are. So that maybe that fits in too. I mean, maybe it's part of a soul group, you know, that are gathering. Or...
Well, I think the reason people have difficulty in understanding what both Melissa and Tom were just talking about is because they're so oriented towards the physical world, they think of birth as the first entry. They don't understand that it's a cycle, and that the souls are all coming from the same place.
True.
And they're coming here, and if they pass while they're here, they're going back there. So you're absolutely right, Tom, that if the child never met deceased grandparents that died before the child was born, the child's soul was still on the other side with those deceased grandparents before it came here.
Yeah. And something else I'd like to mention that Bob said earlier, alluded to the doctors and whatnot write off these deathbed visions as a lack of oxygen or the drugs or something like that. I remember in reading Eben Alexander's book in the appendices, he gets into detail as a neurologist how that's impossible with, you know, lack of oxygen or drugs to have such a clear and vision that you can speak of later. I mean, I'm not doing it justice, but if to read the appendices, if you're one of those people who thinks that we're talking bunk here, he debunks the bunk.
Right, and you know, he mentioned you know, your brain is the cortex, you know, is compromised, you know, it makes clear and lucid thinking impossible.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you explain, you know, that this clear thinking in somebody with a brain that's not functioning, you know, is the basic argument. Some of these people, he being Christopher Kerr, Dr. Kerr did some research studies, and in one study he found that 90% of the dying patients reported having a end-of-life experience. And those could be through dreams, or they can be in a waking state, but either way, the people found comfort in it, and they also described it as being realer than real. You know, that's the way that they termed it. And sometimes it began in a dream state, and then it just continued on, you know, after they would awake. And the way he did the survey is that he obviously had access to all the patients because he's in hospice, and he would interview them every single day, you know, until they, you know, they passed. So you had a tremendous amount of data. So, which, you know, there are very, very high percentages of people that have it. Maybe everybody has one. You know, just that a lot of people are totally mentally and physically incapacitated, and they can't express it. But that doesn't mean, you know, we just don't know about it. But they you know.
I was asking my mother about it today in preparation for tonight's talk, because she, in our home, she took in my great aunt who passed in the home after a few weeks, and my grandmother also passed in our home. But she, and I was around then too, but she, neither she nor I could recall any phenomena like that occurring. But also both women had really become silent and weren't communicating in any way. Although, from what we learned from Dr. Kerr, sometimes they're in that state and then they become lucid briefly. And also for my dad, who passed in his home, but he was, you know, he was maybe alone in his room, deep in thought, as he always was anyway, and maybe he was, you know, having those communications. So just because they're not able to share them with us,
right,
they could be occurring.
And we know that there are also occasions where there are the shared experiences where the people that are sitting with their dying relative see the same visions, the same deceased people as the dying person. So that's pretty hard to explain.
I was hoping that would happen when we sat with Tom's mom, you know, because we were very aware. Like, we were super aware of, like, things to look for. And
yeah, because I remember hearing an account of George Harrison's wife, being that we're in the anniversary of his passing, that when he passed, which was at home in a room, that right when he passed, they could see a glow, and that everybody in the room envisioned, or not envisioned, but actually witnessed. So we were looking for something like that. But we did have a firsthand account when my father was in hospital. He went in for an operation to put a stent in, and it was, at his age and health, it was very iffy, but he insisted on doing it. And when he was on the table for the operation, we were told he had a heart attack, which he did recover from. And we went to visit him the next day, and he started telling me a story, or us, we were both there, a story about seeing a tunnel. And all of his buddies, which were his Navy buddies, were saying, "Come on, Harry, run, run, run." You know, and it was the light and the tunnel, and his buddies were there. And he came back because he wanted to deliver a message to our daughter, and it was just, you know, a day or two later that he had the stroke that finally did him in. And I do want to mention, for people who find themselves in this situation, my dad, when he had the stroke, he never opened his eyes again. He never spoke. You know, that really was it for him. And we mentioned that my mom was unconscious when she went to hospice. And yet, I really do believe that when I sat and spoke with them, that they heard me. In fact, my father had, you know, a little reaction to a couple of things that I said that was sort of hitting me like, "Wow, did you really hear that, what I was just talking about?" And then my mom, of course, with the waiting for the end of the song and that sort of thing. So my advice to people who find themselves with a comatose loved one is keep talking to them. They're hearing you.
Yeah.
I think the singing that you did for your mom is a very important part of it, because it connects people. We know music connects people. We know it raises your vibration, and it probably enhances the experience for everyone in the room. So that would be the thing that I would add to people who are comfortable, because sometimes you're not comfortable doing that. You're in a sterile environment a lot of times in a hospital. But if you know, if you're comfortable with it, take all the people that are with you in the room, join hands with the person who's crossing, bring them into the vibrational circle and sing. And I think that, you know, not only will we change the way people cross over, but we'll be assisting in it. And I think that in and of itself is a beautiful thing.
And of course, years ago, I mean, people didn't pass in hospitals, you know, I mean, everybody passed at home, you know, so People weren't necessarily aware of looking for the things that we're talking about, but nonetheless,
I'll bet you if somebody did some research, you'd find a lot of stories, because you got to remember the environment then was not the environment that you have now. The culture then was not the culture that you have now. Right. They'd have stories about seeing things or hearing things or observing things that were out of the quote-unquote norm.
Yeah, you know, the story with your dad reminded me, if you recall, in CARES talk, there was he played a video of one of his patients before he passed about having this vision of soldiers, and he had been kind of haunted by over the years he was helping soldiers that were mortally wounded, you know, and trying to bring them, you know, back to safety, this gentleman was approaching death, the soldiers came to him, and the dead soldiers that he tried to save and said, "We're coming to help you," you know. So and that was 60 years, you know, prior. So it's pretty interesting things. You know what? I came across, we once had on the radio show Dr. Michael Nam, and he writes about these things. And I pulled up an old paper that he wrote, and it's concerning these end-of-life experiences and mental illness. And he quoted a study from, you know, 100 some odd years ago by this Schubert, and who said, in regard to mental illness, it stated that sometimes the mental illness ceases before death, like a bad dream the individual remembers. Even more, it seemed to Schubert that in some cases, the mental illness of waking life enabled the hidden development of higher aspects of the soul on deeper levels, so that the individuals with mental illness who recover before death can display an extraordinary change and ennoblement in their thinking and speech. And then he reported this case, and bear in mind it was written a long time ago, a woman who died at age 47. 4 weeks before her death, she finally recovered from her bad dream that had lasted for 20 years. But those who knew her before her madness hardly recognized her in her last state of transformation. So ennobled, enhanced, and elevated were all her powers and sensations of her mental nature, so ennobled her articulation. She spoke with distinctness and inner brightness about things which man learns only rarely to understand superficially in his ordinary state of being. Her story aroused furor. Literate and illiterate, educated and uneducated, crowded at this dignified sickbed, all had to confess that even if she would have been taught by the most learned and enlightened men during the time of her illness, her mind could not have been more educated. Her knowledge could not have been more substantial and higher than now, as she seemed to awaken from a long and deep confinement of all powers.
Wow.
So that is an eye-opener. You know, a lot of the people that are imprisoned, you know, by mental illness and we think nothing is going on, I guess the same principle, nearing death, the restrictions of the physical body, the impairment of the mental illness disappears, and the true, you know, spirit or soul is free to express everything.
You know, there's so many ways to look at that too, because I work with children with special needs, and I often feel like, you know, the parents are, you know, in despair and lamenting, and I often feel like the children are really their purpose is to teach love and acceptance, and maybe that whole mental disability is almost like a facade that they chose to come into this world. And then, of course, when you're crossing over, it's lifted off because, you know, it was all just here for the physical, for the human experience.
Well, we hear that in readings all the time about how somebody comes back and says, you know, I was in that dang wheelchair. Well, I'm dancing now, you know, that sort of thing. And interestingly enough, we had an event at CW Post College, and I was sitting at the merch table, and one of the maintenance men from this college came over to the table, and he says, you know, I got to tell you something. You know, I had an experience where I had, you know, received a head injury, and he said, as soon as it happened, all of a sudden I'm sitting on the porch and I'm looking out at this absolutely beautiful pasture, and here comes my dog from when I was a kid, and then all of a sudden my father is shaking me and he's bringing me back into this world, and he goes, I was so pissed. That was so beautiful. Most people don't want to come back from it.
No. That's true. That's very true. We hear that story a lot.
Yeah.
But to him, it's just an experience that he probably never tells anybody. But
yeah.
You know, you weren't going to judge him because of the nature of the work that we do. So it's a shame that he probably, you know, kept that hidden and he didn't give it a label and call it a near death experience.
Yeah.
It's just something that happened, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, there's lots more to talk about. So stay with us. Be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love knows no death, A groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering, and we're continuing our discussion about end-of-life experiences and what's commonly termed deathbed visions. One fascinating thing about these deathbed visions is that there's a thing called, they call them, I don't know why, but Peak and Darien experiences. It's where somebody has a deathbed vision, but they're unaware of the previous death of somebody else. In other words, they think the person is still alive, and they see them in their vision, and they're conversing with them, and then, you know, later it's found out that the person that they're conversing with is in fact dead. You know, nobody knew, but when they found out later that the person had died, that's those are incredibly. Researchers think that those are stand out as the strongest cases for survival, you know, because it's hard to make any sense of that other than what it appears to be. So, I guess they're not as common, but it's all throughout literature going back 200 years. So one of the things that we talked about last night, which maybe we could bring up again, is so these people have these deathbed visions and they have it close to death. And the closer that they are, the visions increase in frequency. So essentially, you know, these are visits from people. And we also know that you and I and a lot of people have these dream visits. So the question would be, are they the same thing? If you have a dream tonight where your loved one, deceased loved one, comes to you and it's an incredible, you know, visit, is that the same thing as a deathbed vision, why do they seem to come, you know, less frequently when you're living your life, and then they come on like gangbusters when you're facing death?
Well, I do think it's the same thing, and I do think that when you're close to death, it's all the preparation period to bringing you over, that they're making sure that they're there for you and making it as pleasant as an experience as it can be for you. And I think that the dream visits are something they could do at any time, I suppose. But we've also, you know, a lot of people ask this too. They're over here and saying, you know, I miss them so much. Why don't they come? Why don't they show themselves? If they can do it, why don't they do it and do it more? And the answer to that has been that it's not easy for them on the other side. It's all an energy thing. If you watch a medium work, a medium has to elevate their energy, their vibration, to be able to communicate. But the discarnate spirit has to also manifest their energy and lower their vibration so that there's a meeting of the minds, if you will, and that's not easy. So for somebody to get it, to go through the process of getting their energy to a point where you can see them or hear them or experience them in a dream, is not something they can do all the time.
I'm thinking it's like a veil is a curtain is lifting the veil, and imagine if like we've got this heavy curtain around us, but it's getting sheer as you're getting close to that other side. And in our testimony of light book, when she said it has begun, you know, the veil is the curtain is lifting, or the sheerness is happening. And imagine that first you can't see anything through that curtain, and then you're seeing fuzzy figures, and now some of those are very recognizable.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it just the simple logic is that it's easier, you know. But I think that we have to think of it as a dream visit is just that. It's a visit. In a deathbed vision, it's an escort.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think so. I think they're both the same thing. And I think that we keep wanting to interpret things according to our physical world. I think that it's all taking place in the third eye, whether you're awake or you're asleep. That's where you're seeing them. And so it's not like they're visiting. This is like a common place. Like, let's say you have a friend who lives in New Jersey, and you live on the other side of Manhattan on Long Island, and you say, let's meet in Manhattan. And the person in New Jersey has all this traffic that slows them down from getting into Manhattan, and the person from Long Island has all this traffic slowing them down, mm-hmm. and they have to really put an effort into meeting up in Manhattan. And I think it's kind of like the same thing.
Yeah.
The big difference between what Tom was talking about with people saying, oh, I wish they would come to me in my dream more often, is that that person's in the physical, putting physical attributes on their own wants. And a person who's getting ready to cross over has released everything already. They're accepting of what is there and what is coming to them. And I think that that's the only difference between the two. Other than that, it's all coming in the third eye.
And also an analogy of why they don't come more often and show themselves. I used to teach math. And, you know, if you get a complicated math problem that takes 15 minutes to solve, I could just tell my students, oh, you know the answer, what's the answer? But, of course, you don't learn if you don't solve it yourself, and that's what life's all about. You're here to learn something.
Right.
And if your relatives were always standing there telling you, oh, you know, don't worry about that. You know, this is not affecting you. This is not that. You will never learn. You just be given the answers, and you end up on the other side of life and say, "Oh, I got to go back and do it again. I didn't learn anything."
Right, but they are here at your time of need. When
yes.
when you're in grief, they're here. Whether you're allowing them in or not is another story. And we see
yeah.
this all over and over. Even the simplest signs, they don't pick up on them because they want A, B, and C, and the spirit's giving them D, E, and F, and they're just it's not what they want.
Yeah, one of my favorite things that I've seen is that exactly people say, well, I want them to come. I've asked them to come. I've asked them that. You know, I've asked them to send me a sign, and I said, and then they say, well, have you stopped and looked for the sign? You know, and of course most people, my mom included, she, you know, was napping once in her chair, and she all of a sudden she woke up, and my dad was kneeling at her side and looking up and smiling at her, and she goes, "Ooh, I want that to happen again." Well, that happened, and other things are happening. So you just don't put the blinders on and say, "I want him to show up again," but take the blinders off and look around you and see all the ways he is showing up.
Right, but notice he showed up at a time when she wasn't wanting.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yeah.
So.
Another thing that I wanted to mention, the advice that people, they asked Dr. Kerr what advice he would give to people that were approaching death. And he tells them, fasten your seat belts. you're gonna have meaningful, you know, things happening and themes and you know, and visions and so forth. So, and that theme of traveling comes up a lot. People have even said, you know, I need to get my suitcase. I'm going on a trip and, you know, a journey. sometimes people said that they saw their deceased loved ones, but they didn't, not much was said, and by said, I guess, you know, telepathically, but they were just there, you know, waiting for them, you know, accompanied by a sense of peace. So, and people describe crowded rooms. It's not only like mom or dad, you know, that's there. It's, you know, crowded.
Yeah.
you have a whole, you know, greeting party. So that, you know, that's pretty interesting.
I wonder what it means, Bob. Last night I had a dream, and I really wouldn't have said it was a dream visit, but the more I'm thinking about it, and it was Tom's mom coming in the door. And it was like I saw the door, like a storm door, opening through the little glass windows in the wooden door. And I kind of thought, oh, she's coming back. She's back. And she comes in the door and all smiles and as if she'd been on a trip, on a journey. I felt like she was sort of bundled down with some packages and stuff. But the craziest thing was I commented on her hair, which that when I woke up, it's like green meringue.
Green meringue.
And my hair was something similar, but not as green. But it's like a meringue. Or maybe like those shampoo commercials where the person's hair is all full of suds. But what on earth that could have meant, I don't know. But that she was back from a trip.
So,
we'll see. That just happened last night, so we'll see if I have any.
Well, maybe you'll have part two tonight.
I think she invented this green meringue stuff that's going to become the do from 2008.
And maybe it was a instruction.
You
do have a baking background.
Right, you're supposed to be making meringue cookies in green for the holidays.
That will be interesting to see if I do.
You know, sometimes I pick up I read these articles and journals that are meant for mental health professionals just because they pop up in my wherever I am, and it's interesting the way, you know, they know these things exist, and they give instructions to practitioners on what to expect, you know, and they don't necessarily, some of the articles don't believe that it's, you know, they still believe that it may be due to hallucinations, but that they give instructions on how to treat your patients. But one said it's not uncommon in the weeks or days before death for the person to speak of being visited by dead relatives and friends and groups of children and so forth. Even pets, they may say these visitors come to collect them. They're giving them all these little clues, you know, so, and they talk about moving in and out of reality. They describe experiences of what seems to be another world. They start speaking of a journey. They suddenly stare at a point in the room or turn towards the window and experience a sense of amazement, joy, or wonder. At least they got that part of it right. I mean, they're just recounting what, you know, all the professionals who have witnessed this, you know, tell them. And, you know, and at the end, they tell them, you know, one of them, which is more progressive in the journal, said these visions are not hallucinations or a reaction to medication. The most important thing to do if your loved one is seeing visions or having a visitation dream is to acknowledge and support them. Don't argue with the, you know, the patient. You know, don't try to correct them.
Let's hope we wouldn't.
Yeah, don't try to explain it. Don't panic. Don't do anything. You know, it's like take them at their word and encourage them to share the experience with you. Well, that's good advice, right?
Medical profession. Okay.
All right, we reached the end of our time.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Kimberly Saavedra, Ashley Jackson, Robin Murray, Fred Folger, Michael Tim, David Haith, Glenna Irwin, Marianne Pierschka, Diane Archangel, Isabel Ginsberg, Vince Mattia, Lauren Remnath, Rich LeBly, Helen Montalto, Cynthia Post, Evelyn Ingram, Tina Young, Donna Mello, Matt Mello, Veronica James, Alex Hanna, Catherine Pye, Linda Ellis, Eddie Coons, Sandy Rabel, Ed O'Brien. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.